there's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Spring is here, and you can now get almost anything you need for your sunny days delivered with Uber Eats. What do we mean by almost? Well, you can't get a well-groomed lawn delivered, but you can get a chicken parmesan delivered. A cabana? That's a no. But a banana? That's a yes. A nice tan? Sorry. Nope. But a box fan? Happily, yes. A day of sunshine? No. A box of fine wines? Yes. Uber Eats can definitely get you that. Get almost anything delivered with Uber Eats. Order now. Alcohol in select markets. Product availability may vary by region. See app for details.
Shouldn't you be at home?
And Love. Oh, and Love, he's got a real chance now. Peter and Love.
John Walk will take the penalty. Up goes Dion Dublin.
An own goal from Ruddock.
Ball by Frank here for Kiwabia.
Panister and Bruce in the queue again. Bruce scores!
And Chris Bart-Williams is in.
Stuart Fox, he's gone to the left.
Oh. Now, you know him better than anybody, probably. Do you back him to score quickly, yes or no?
Yes.
Tony Hutton!
No!
Hello and welcome back to Quickly Kevin, Will He Score? I'm Chris Gold, joining me Josh Widdicombe.
Hello.
And the man with hairier hands and Richard Keys. It's director of podcast, Michael Marden.
Not true, but hello.
I mean, it wouldn't be true of anyone on Earth.
I've got to go back at least 100,000 years. I'm very rarely slag off someone in public, and I enjoy us telling these stories about Richard Keys. 20% of the enjoyment is just the thought that he might bite. Do you know what I mean?
He would not take this well.
He writes a blog post about our podcast.
Oh, I would love Richard Keys to write a blog post.
Would you?
Yeah, you can't buy publicity like that. You can't buy publicity. Oh, if he talked about how he's happy in Qatar and how there's kind of this rubbish podcast back in the UK telling these stories about me diving in a football bag.
What do you think his angle would be?
I think his angles would be that we don't know what we're talking about because we're not football people.
Yeah.
That we're puerile.
Michael, you...
And I think he'd put the words comedian in quote marks. Yeah.
Well, I don't find it funny. Yeah. As we began talking, like, just then, Michael darted his head around the glass window as someone walking past, and I thought for a second, is it Richard Keys?
Oh, my God.
I don't associate the Richard Keys of today with the Richard Keys of the 90s.
No.
I still love
the Richard
Keys
of the
90s.
I didn't have Sky in the 90s, so I only... My first real knowledge of Richard Keys was...
It's Richard Keys 2.0.
Richard Keys 2.0.
Yeah, it's a bit like the Morrissey thing, though. He sort of...
Richard Keys, a bit like Morrissey!
You loved his earlier stuff.
He's tarnished his early good work.
I'd love to know what Andy Gray thinks. Much like I'd love to know what Johnny Marr thinks.
Look, those two are thick as thieves. And Andy Gray, you'd never crack Andy Gray. He'd never tell you what he really thinks, if he really thinks anything different at all. Right!
Correspondence?
Yes!
I'm Jim Rosenthal, and this is the Electronic Postbag.
You've got mail.
Do you remember when we discussed John Collins being replaced by Collins John at Fulham?
Yeah.
Do you want a bit more detail from James?
Oh, yeah, I thought you were going to say when Sky replaced Richard Keys with Keys Richard.
Hi, lads. I enjoyed the very rare non-Michael Jackson-related mention of Fulham on the pod. The John Collins, Collins John story is, in fact, better than stated. We were playing at Loftus Road while Craven Cottage was being renovated when the swap of the Johns took place. In a genius piece of planning, the club actually had John Collins on the pitch to bid farewell and to introduce new signing Collins John.
No way.
In the days before Twitter, it was clearly easier to keep signings quiet, something the Fulham PR team clearly did in this instance to make the ultimate impact. However, whilst a brilliant idea, a slightly suspect PA system meant that at the ground it was very hard to really tell what was being said, leaving everyone very confused over whether a Scottish midfielder had decided to in fact stay. And who was the other bloke who was with him? holding the other end of the scarf aloft. Oh, my word. The thought of people going, what's going on?
Who's that guy?
Who's that guy? So weird.
It's such a weird decision to get John Collins to unveil Collins John. I love that they replaced John Collins with Collins John.
They had him unveil him.
Now, if ever a title of an email... That's making sound, but it doesn't matter because it shows... is to appeal to you. I'll just read you the title and then give me out of 10 how excited you are for the email. The email is called I Have a Hans Sager's Tie.
Oh, no. All the way to 11 for me.
This is the content we've been crying out for 3 years.
Hi, chaps. Been meaning to write for a while. Come on, mate. But maybe I was a bit miffed after you blanked my 90s Wimbledon haiku on your Facebook page. I own a Hans Sager's tie, pictures attached, that has a dull to most, but hopefully mildly interesting to you, story to it. I bought the tie for my dad for Christmas back in 1993, liberated about 12 years later during my parents' divorce. At first glance, the tie makes no sense, as it has tiny RAF helmets on it, a load of little Fulham players and a crazy gang logo. But hopefully I can explain. We played Liverpool in the Coca-Cola Cup, as it was then, got a draw at Anfield and got them back to Selhurst. In the replay, even though we were at home, we had to wear our third kit because our home kit clashed with the referee's kit, who in the cups in those days still wore all black. During the replay, a great game, it ended up going to penalties. A fine show from some big names on both sides stepping up. John Barnes, Robbie Fowler, Vinnie Jones and Dean Holdsworth. And in goal, Sagers and Grobbelaar. They both made saves. Sagers saved two. Three on the night, and when Neil Ardley scored the winning penalty, the players wheeled away like planes and the DJ playing the theme tune to Dam Busters. So, Hans Sagers deemed that the victory and those images of the players pretending to be planes worthy of a special tie.
What?
And 10-year-old me agreed, now to reap the rewards. Here are the pictures.
Wow.
So, you can see on the back, it says in the label, the Crazy Gang Collection.
Wow. Definitely a pet hate of mine, which this email touches on, when a team scores a goal and they play a song out of the PA.
Yeah, it's not the NFL.
Not acceptable. Not in England, mate. So is this what Hans Sagers were doing? They're just novelty, pumping out novelty ties every time something happened?
Well, I think they're all football related.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing with that is, you're not going to shift loads of those. Like, you're getting a tie designed and made. Like, how many special ties for Wimbledon beating Liverpool are you going to shift?
And do you think Hans Sagers had a role in them... Do you think Hans Sagers set it up? When you score, do this. I'll make a bunch of ties. We'll tell the PA guy.
Oh, do you think he had the ties first?
Yeah, that's an idea.
He bought a load of dead stock.
If you have a Hans Sagers tie, we'd love to see a picture of it. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to know about more specific designs. Right, do you want some more Gillingham?
Yes.
Hi, guys. Just after listening to your episode about Gillingham, for some reason the name Paul Scally started wrecking my head. After a quick Google, it reminded me of possibly the strangest story I've ever heard in my life. One of the biggest crimes that happened in Dubai late in 2012 was one of Paul Scally's tortoises was kidnapped from a local hospital.
In Dubai? What's a tortoise doing in a hospital?
Even funnier, the tortoise that went missing was called Blake. And the other tortoise he owned was named Amy Winehouse.
Did not see that coming.
He had named his tortoise after Amy Winehouse and her husband, Blake Fielder Civil.
Wow.
Below is some of the article. This is the article. Few of us know how it feels to be a millionaire expat football club owner with a missing tortoise. But that
totally
is
the, agree.
That is the harrowing predicament Gillingham FC chairman Paul Scally finds himself in right now. Scally's family live in the UAE. Of course they bloody do. Along with two giant tortoises named Amy Winehouse and Blake. Much like his real-life namesake, Blake left his partner and escaped from the family home, ending up at a German-Saudi hospital where security staff picked him up and called a vet for help. However, before the vet arrived, a mystery kidnapper arrived and took the tortoise away as a present for his own son. Rather than attempt to stop the man, the security staff took a photo above left of Blake being snatched and loaded onto a truck. So, there you go.
being loaded onto a truck. How big are these? They're Galapagos turtles.
Yeah, they must be huge. Why are you getting loaded?
Isn't the phrase loaded onto a truck? Yeah. You don't load a normal-sized turtle onto a truck.
How does it escape as well? It's a tortoise.
Well, Amy and Blake famously didn't hang around. They're always disappearing somewhere.
There we go. If you have any more stories on any of these things raised in this episode, this is how you get in touch.
Do get in touch with us on the show. Email hello@quicklykevin.com. Follow us on Twitter @quicklykevin or our Instagram, which is @quicklykevin. I'm Clive Tilsley, ITV Sport in London.
Hello, listener. Welcome. You may notice there's a slight audio difference in some of the sections of this show because they're the bits we're recording now in our 56K dial-up modems since the apocalypse to give you an authentic 90s feel to some of this show. So our guest this week is stand-up comic, singer, actor, voiceover presenter and, most importantly, Torquay United fan. It is Mr. Charlie Baker. Torquay, big rivals of Plymouth, would you agree, Josh?
I wouldn't agree, no. We do cover that in the interview. I have a lot of affection for Torquay United, as I do Charlie Baker. And I absolutely love this interview. I always love the ones where we talk to people about clubs that we don't really know anything about. And you kind of find out that every club has this kind of story over the decade, particularly if that person's grown up with this club. And genuinely, this made me love Torquay United. And more, it made me really, really proud to support a lower league club. Not proud enough that I don't want Plymouth to get in the Premier League, but quite proud. This is Charlie Baker. Our guest this week is Devon's favourite comedian, a lifelong fan of Devon's third best club, Torquay United. He hopes they don't get promoted to the Football League, as it will ruin his non-league podcast, The National Obsession. Please welcome Charlie Baker.
Hello, that was really kind of you, Josh.
No worries.
Two lies in the opening 30 seconds. I'll let you decide which they were.
Yeah. Do you prefer non-league?
I don't prefer it, but it's made me realise I just love Torquay United. I don't mind where they play.
Yeah. That's good.
I don't care where they play or what they do or who. I thought it was going to be really gutting and boring, but actually, when we drop down to the National League South, which is regional football, although I have this argument all the time, it's not, because we end up playing like Eastbourne.
How does it work? Midlands teams that switch between South and North season?
Gloucester City this year were nearly in the National League North. Gloucester were nearly playing like, however they play up in Gateshead, you know. But I have the argument all the time, it should be East and West, rather than, because actually, to get from Torquay to Eastbourne.
Oh, yeah.
A lot. Anyway, that's is this a geography? I don't know. No, so dropping to the National League South made me realise it's just the team and the club that I love, if we've got a good team. But also, when you drop down lower, if they give it a go, it's amazing. Like, we beat team 7-2 and stuff. And so we'd be 5-0 up at half-time.
Yeah.
So you'd travel for the first time ever.
And the grounds must be amazing.
Oh, it's amazing, yeah. The first time ever as a Torquay fan, you'd travel in hope. Because I've never travelled or gone to a game thinking we're going to win this.
Do you feel like you're a fan of a big club?
That's what you are. You're like Man City. We played Concord Rangers away last year.
Where's that?
Which is on Canvey Island. Not even the biggest club on Canvey Island. Right? You're like this, Josh. So Dave Thomas, does that name ring any bells to you? No. Maybe not, because you're Plymouth. Yeah, because you've been more of the Sunday Independent or... What was the Plymouth paper? Evening Herald, yeah. So you'd have got that. Herald Express is the Torquay paper. Dave Thomas is the journalist who's covered them, I'd say, 40 years?
Yeah.
50 years? Wind and rain, day and night, success and mainly no success. Dave Thomas is in the Netflix documentary, which we spoke about earlier, Losers, about the...
We will come to that.
The Brin episode, which we'll talk about later. Anyway, we beat Concord Rangers 1-0. We're in the arse end of nowhere on Canvey Island. We've just won 1-0 in the National League South. We're filing out. Dave Thomas is tapping away there on his match report, which he has done for the last 45 years. We're filing away. Bloke behind me goes, there's Dave Thomas spending his fucking Netflix money. I And you go, oh, I get it. We don't like success. We don't want anyone to be successful. Don't put your head above the parapet, whatever you do.
Amazing. Right.
Is there a bit of you talking, like, getting into the, like, non-league football? Is this like, well, this is as bad as it gets, and if you can survive this, is it fun in that aspect? Like, you know? Well, like, being rock bottom is like...
You think that, and then you go down again. That was it. So we went out of the league a couple of times and got back into the league. Relegation from the Football League is massive in my lifetime as a Torquay United fan. So I started supporting them in 86. 87 is the season we'll talk about, the loser season, the Bryn football season. And then in the mid-90s, the whole Stevenage thing happened, which we finished bottom of the league. We're going to come to all this, trailing ahead. And then eventually we actually got relegated, and went back up, and then we got relegated again. And you think, right, that's it, let's draw a line. And then we got relegated out of the conference, out of the National League.
So were you in financial trouble, or were you just
bad?
We were
always in financial trouble, and we were bad. But you know what it's like in the lower leagues. You know what it's like. As soon as you get two good players, that's it. You're away. Yeah. You'll win. It's literally one good player gets you anywhere. If you've got someone who scores goals,
exactly.
You've got a 20-plus goal scorer and a good centre-back, you're basically going to win the league. Isn't it?
Yeah. We always start, have you met a 90s footballer?
Now I work on Talk Sport. I meet these people all the time, and it is...
Do you get overawed?
No, because in some ways it's amazing, and then some ways you go, oh, well, disappointing. This is another childhood dream smashed. I've always found that I've attached my emotional well-being to football. And if football's...
What an awful life.
But if my life's going badly, a lot of the time I'll go, well, at least I've got football.
Yeah.
You know, at least I do sort of secretly, deep down, I'll say this out loud, if the football's going well, bits of my job won't go, well. Professionally, I'll do badly. If I'm doing okay professionally, Torquay will be absolutely relegated. But then it's, you know, evened out in the last few years. So.
Yeah, we must be top of the world now with Torquay carrying on.
Cheers.
Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah.
So let's take Torquay United back to the 80s. You started supporting in 1986. What was the first game you went to? What?
Burnley at home, midweek.
Oh, like a Tuesday nighter.
Tuesday nighter.
How old would you have been at this point?
10. And I went with my dad. And for me, early football is midweek games. Because my dad worked 6 or 7 days a week.
Right.
So we would never go on a Saturday, really. We'd always go...
Under the lights.
Under the lights. So it's pretty exciting, isn't it?
Yeah. Like
that midweek feeling.
What was playing more like as an experience when you turned up? Like, did you know it was... Did it feel like an arena?
No, because you don't know it's bad, so it feels amazing.
Yeah.
You've never been football.
Like, we watched this documentary about Gillingham and they showed the Plymouth ground from 1998.
Yeah.
And I remember that being brilliant. A huge ground compared to Exeter and Torquay.
The Plymouth ground was, that was.
But it's not. When you see it now, it's awful. But you're so small, so it feels so big. Like, did it feel...
No. Because it just felt brilliant. But we sat in the family stand.
Yeah.
I remember that, which is behind a goal. Which I think it's the only time we ever did that. Because I wanted to sit with the swearers, you know.
Yeah,
stand. Still stand. Still stand at Torquay.
Do you?
The away end was four steps, uncovered.
Nice. Welcome to hell.
And one stand burnt down.
Burnt down.
Yeah, if you watch the documentary, the stand has just burnt down.
How's it burnt down?
It's made of wood. And I think there was an electric pylon or something.
Yeah.
And it burnt down. Yeah.
So was that just down. Gone then?
That just was sort of like a burnt, charred, like a bad barbecue.
And it was still there, like, you know, like the
still
Brighton
there, but sort of you're not allowed on it. But pop side was all standing.
Yeah.
And the family end was seats. And then we'd go to like the odd midweek game. We'd rarely go on a Saturday.
And did you know what was going on? Did you follow it or
sort of not really. I knew what football was.
And were Torquay bad in the 80s?
Yeah, really bad, yeah. So if you watch the documentary Losers, that is the end of that season. So that season...
So tell us what happened there.
That is the end of the season. We needed to stay up. We play in Crewe Alexandra with David Platt, etc.
Oh, really?
Crewe Alexandra came to us. They were getting promoted. They were like the best team in the league. we needed to get a draw, and if we got a draw, Lincoln City got relegated.
And were you at this game?
I always thought I was, and it turns out I wasn't.
We've all done that.
Thought I was there, but
how did you find out?
I just said, we were at that game, weren't we, Dad? No, we never went on a Saturday till the year after. He said, you never went, used to go, because I used to work, and so when your brother got old enough, he could take you, you know, but you weren't at that game. I think what it was, my nan ran a guest house in Babbacombe in Torquay, around the corner from the ground, and we'd go and see her on a Saturday. So I think, I thought,
You were close enough proximity.
And, yeah, but also it's a sellout.
When you see the footage of that match, I've never seen a pitch like it.
As bone dry.
It's unreal, like the Sahara.
Yeah. It's like there's dust clouds coming off the pitch.
You know when England play cricket in India and it's like you've got to have two spinners because it's so dusty.
It's unreal, isn't it?
It's unbelievable. The ball must have just been bouncing.
Yeah, my dad's garage, Key Garage, Newton Abbot, he had a board round the side.
Oh, what, he had an advertising board?
He had an advertising board.
Do you know how much he paid for it?
No idea, but we used to love seeing that.
Yeah,
I bet. Going and seeing that. And that's one of the reasons we'd never sit that side, because we couldn't see the board. So when that documentary came out, I thought, oh, brilliant, Dad's board will be on this documentary. But of course, it's all filmed by one bloke on a VHS camcorder from one side, so a bit disappointing. But anyway, at the end of that game, so if we draw...
How much... I love that you wanted to see the board.
Oh, I love... Well, that's a bit of glamour, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know what it's like when you're in the West Country. Anything is glamorous, isn't it? Oh, look. So what happens in the match is we go 1-2 down or something. No, we go 1-0, 1-all. They score, go 2-1 up. There's 5 minutes to go. We're relegated, basically. Police dog... Right, there's a bit of trouble. One's in the pop side. Don't know what it is. All the police dogs go over to that side. Jim McNichol played for Exeter. Did he play for Plymouth?
He mainly played for... I don't know if he did play for Plymouth.
I wonder if he completed the...
Yeah, a lot of people completed the triumvirate. We'd all have the same players because they just didn't want to move.
Didn't want to move. Get down, Everett. I've bought a house now.
I'll do all three.
All right, I'll play for Torquay. It would normally go Plymouth, Exeter, Torquay.
Yeah.
Weymouth Town, Taunton, Tiverton, Newton Spurs. It's like a train line in many ways. Change at Castle Carey.
Yeah, he might have done the Holy Trinity. He might have.
Jim McNichol brings the ball out. He was a really good player. Brings the ball out. Police dog thinks he's an intruder. Runs on the pitch, bites him.
Yeah.
Jim McNichol goes down.
Yeah.
Big bite mark in his leg.
Yellow card for the dog.
You know, there's no time to go. In the extra time created by the dog, Paul Dobson scores, keeps us in the league.
It's mad, isn't it?
The dog. It's one of my favourite ever football stories.
Do you know my issue with the story?
Yeah, go on. The protagonist.
the talkie stay up.
Yeah.
No, my issue with the story is that you end up with this situation where... Because injury time is time that would have existed anyway.
Yeah.
So it's not extra time added on. Do you see what I mean?
But come on, mate. He's had his
it's all a bit of fun and we all enjoy it. But I've always...
But that was injury time.
Anyway, Dave Thomas is there. Spending his net.
You can watch it on Amazon Prime.
You can watch it. Anyway, so that happens. Manager gets sacked. We then get Cyril Knowles.
Right.
Nice one, Cyril, from Spurs, right, who the song is about. Good player, really good player. Turns out to be a brilliant manager, absolutely brilliant for us. Same team, the season after, we have Spurs on a Tuesday night in the Littlewoods Cup at that point, and we beat them 1-0.
Oh, wow.
At home, Derek Dawkins. But I was at that game. I was definitely at that game, because that is just seared onto my...
That must be one of them.
And also, there's pictorial proof. I saw it, there's a photo of Derek Dawkins on everyone's shoulders doing it. Doing the victory V's.
Yeah.
And I'm in that picture.
And
I went, that's me! Yeah.
Because I want to ask, in the 80s, you got re-elected twice to the league. So you finished bottom.
Mm.
How does that obviously got rid of? How does that work? Well, why is that happening?
Because the story always goes that Football League chairman would like their weekends in Torquay. They like a weekend away.
So they'd re-elect Torquay.
So they'd re-elect Torquay because they didn't want to have to go to wherever who had won the...
Wow. So the fact you're a seaside town.
Yeah.
I bet it's kept you in the league.
Yeah, the fact that you are, you know, the thing that stops us getting any good players, which is we're out on a limb. No one wants to come to us. But the fact that it's a nice weekend away, the fact that fans like it and...
Wow. So just the real action thing.
That's gone, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's gone, yeah, I know.
So that's the thing about the Brin season. That's the first ever season of relegation.
Right. And why did re-election exist? It feels mad that it kind of...
I think the same way as it all existed to look after their own, look after themselves, you know.
In the late 80s, you had Lee Sharp, who went to Man U.
We did.
So did you see Lee Sharp?
£185,000, I'm going to say, something like that, right?
£180,000,
yeah, I saw him once or twice, I think.
Was he good?
I think he was a 16-year-old left back, or left winger or something, so he was fine.
Yeah.
We had other players you thought were better.
Oh, yeah. Really? Oh, that's interesting. I thought Lee Sharp would, like, completely stand out for Torquay.
No, because he's 16, and the thing about lower league players is they're massive. They're just big, massive blokes.
Yeah.
And the little 16-year-old just looks like nothing.
So when he went to Man U and he was brilliant, was it shocking to you?
No, that was like, that's huge news, you know.
Yeah. Were you proud of Lee Sharp?
Of course, yeah. Of course you're proud of Lee Sharp. We don't really know what it is because, as you know, you're just getting into football.
Yeah.
When you're 10, 11, 12, you're like just getting into it and you don't really know the rhythms of it or what happens or...
So it makes perfect sense that Lee Sharp would go to Man U.
Yeah, I remember because I liked Liverpool and I liked Ian Rush. I particularly liked Ian Rush.
Yeah.
So when Ian Rush went to Juventus, about around the same time, I think.
About 87.
I couldn't believe that was happening, that Ian Rush would leave Liverpool. So, but also, Lee Sharp hadn't been at our club long enough.
Yeah, he wasn't like a Torquay legend.
No, it wasn't like, oh, God, we're going to lose Lee, that's it, that's game over.
Yeah.
He wasn't really there long enough for us to... But then, you know, forever Torquay, isn't he? You know, forever. Started at Torquay.
Did you find yourself cheering on United in the 90s when it, like, because Lee Sharp was there? No,
no, not really. No. If he was on, you know, be like, started at Torquay. You know, straight in with any badge at all, you know, no.
No, I was going to say, I was obsessed with... the Torquay chairman in the 90s,
yeah, Mike Bateson.
So Mike Bateson was a kind of local celebrity chairman.
Mm.
But I don't really know why, but he was in charge of a thing in Devon called Mod Deck Windows, which did double glazing.
The double glazing boom. You know, it was the 80s, wasn't it? The 80s, everybody got UPVC windows.
Yeah, and he... Was he in his own advert? Why was he such a prominent figure in my childhood?
Yeah, I think he was in his own adverts, and... Also, I think he quite liked the associated heightening of his profile that came with being a Football League manager.
Yeah, chairman,
he did weird things like he'd have a ventriloquist's dummy called Algernon in his office.
Yeah,
that would sometimes get involved in negotiations. If you've ever heard anything more League of Gentlemen, I want to hear it.
So what, he would get involved in contract negotiations?
Allegedly, yes. You know, and...
Did you ever bump into these characters, like, around Torquay, like some of the players, the chairman, like, as a kid?
Tony Beddo, he's one of our players. He played for us for about 10 years, I think he was better than he was. He was always the player that, someone will come in for...
Yeah, 10 years later.
Someone will come in for Beddo. Well, if we can keep hold of Beddo. You know, Tony Beddo. Anyway, he bought my mum's Fiat Punto.
Whoa!
Well, my dad was a Fiat dealer, right? Yeah. He had a Fiat garage and he did used cars as well. But he bought my mum's yellow Fiat Punto Sporter.
Tony Beddo.
So that was big news in our house. You'll never guess who bought the car.
Wow!
Tony Beddo, and I went, I bet he's got a move.
Did you consider supporting Plymouth or Exeter?
Never.
Okay.
Never, ever.
So what was the decision? How did you decide? On
closest.
Closest?
Yeah.
Yeah, the traditional way is to get a map.
And also my nan lived like a mile from the ground, so we could hear it, we could see it. It was closest, easiest to get to for us. Plymouth are scum, Exeter are scum.
And how much would the kind of West Country, how much would it kick off? Was there a real West Country rivalry amongst you?
They would say, if you were to ask a Plymouth fan, I'd say Plymouth liked Torquay.
Yeah, yeah.
And Plymouth and Exeter hate each other, and Exeter and Torquay hate each other.
Plymouth would always sing, "We only laugh at the Torquay, we only laugh at the..."
Yeah, it was kind of patronising.
Patronising, you know. Also, I remember thinking Plymouth was some kind of... Because they'd been on... I saw them on the telly, What was it? The Arsenal. What was that, Josh? Cup semi-final, was it?
No, we played Watford in the Cup semi-final in 84.
That was it, yeah. I must have seen that. Yeah, I must have seen that. Yeah. That was live on telly, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So I remember thinking all that. And then they had Tommy Tynan, who was amazing.
Yeah.
And would break all sorts of records.
We went up in 86. That was before my
championship
time.
Then. We went up to
what is now the championship in 86.
Division 2.
And we were there till 92.
Yeah, and that was like and you had Dave Smith.
Yeah, a good team. Kevin Hodges. This must sound like absolutely nothing to you. No.
Good team. So Plymouth.
This is how I've always imagined this podcast. Finally.
Plymouth were just so far beyond us and bigger than us that we'd only ever draw them maybe a cup or a pre-season friendly. We'd never really play them until later in the 90s when you...
Although we did play you in something called the Devon Cup.
Yeah, there's always...
What is that?
Devon Cup, the St Luke's Bowl.
Yeah.
All those things. Yeah, well, it's just reserve team football.
Yeah.
Is that all it is?
Well, I just remember, like, occasionally it'd be like, oh, we're playing Exeter in the Devon Cup tonight.
Yeah. Would you go to away games? Would you go to, like...
I went to Torquay away, but we...
How was that?
It was fine. My mate got in under the fence.
Did he?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Like Glastonbury.
Yeah. I'm sure they'd have just let him in if he paid the £4 or whatever it was to get in.
But it was...
No, and then Exeter were our rivals. And so, actually, I think the most popular clip of whatever is bad 90s football on Twitter is a Torquay United miss. Adrian Leadbitter. I'm in that away end of that Exeter. It's Boxing Day.
Oh, and what's the miss like?
Oh, it's I remember on the day thinking this is unreal. He's like on the line. And it goes over.
The other thing I remember about Torquay being quite kind of not amateurish, but like
okay.
No, is that you trained on Newton Abbott Racecourse. You trained on the racecourse.
I've walked across racecourses a few times.
That's the divots
that a horse can leave behind.
Yeah, that didn't always happen. That was a later thing. I don't know where we used to train, but if you read Gary Nelson's book, Left Foot in the Grave, after Left Foot Forward, that is a season with Torquay.
Yeah.
And they're basically, they drive around in the Sherpa van that we got for being in the Sherpa van final, which is now the Checker Trade Trophy.
Yeah.
We got into the final of that.
And you got given a van.
That was under Cyril Knowles as well. The Bolton, Phil Neal's Bolton in 19-something-something.
Yeah. And you're still driving around in the Sherpa van?
In the mid-90s, because that's what you like as a club. So they're taking the players around looking for a training pitch. In the mid-90s, in the Sherpa van from...
What, like random, like looking for a park?
Yeah, looking for like a
why didn't get a map out? Why did you need to drive around?
That's mad.
Yeah, but we were in the middle of the race course for a bit, so you could go and watch it. And
did you ever go?
Oh, yeah, of course we did. Go down there.
What, to go watch them train?
Just pretend we weren't.
have a flutter on a nag while you're there.
Yeah, but it's hard because they haven't got any money. So no one goes to watch it and they haven't got any money. So...
Yeah.
If you're a lower league club and your maximum income is 6,000 people, so you have to buy wisely. And no, you don't buy anyone anymore either.
So in 1991, some success comes your way.
Yes.
As a fan, you get into the playoff final.
Yeah, we Blackpool,
And did that feel at that time amazing to you?
Absolutely, unreal.
Well, did you go to Wembley?
Well, actually, we'd been to Wembley with the Sherpa van trophy a couple of years before.
So getting to
Wembley bit was like, oh, we've been to Wembley before, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
I couldn't go. I was doing a show. I was in Jersey doing a show. This is the thing. A lot of the time, I have had to miss big football matches and not be there. I was always there when we'd lose at Wembley. I started to give myself the hoodoo, you know. And I asked the next day, can anyone tell me, you know, no internet or anything.
Yeah.
So I had to ring my mum and say, what was the score? And she said, oh, it was 12-11 on penalties.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
that's the real score.
So we were playing Blackpool, who were like league leaders. They had a player called Dave Bamber, who was like broke records in the lower leagues for goals. This is 91. And we drew 2-2. And this was Blackpool's first cup final, for want of a better word, since the 53 Stanley Matthews, Stanley Mortensen cup final. So it was like, wow, Blackpool at Wembley. It's like...
You know, where they belong.
And I think it was on a Friday night or something. I don't think it was on a Saturday day. I remember it being under the lights. Good team. So in that team is Matt Elliott.
Yeah.
Leicester.
Yeah.
Darren Moore, Derby, West Brom. Who was the West Brom manager recently. And a player called Mark Loram, who had a history with Torquay, which was he was our best player for a long, long time. Like really, really good sort of winger. Yeah. Local lad as well from Brixham. So like one of our own, and like got signed by QPR, went, didn't like it, came back to Torquay.
It's amazing how often that happens in the lower leagues, isn't it? Yeah. It's really like teams like Torquay.
Yeah.
Like players going away and going, actually, I just want to be back in Torquay.
Exactly. Well, you can understand it, can't you? You know, if you grew up somewhere and you like it and that's your... and you look at it now, we know mental health in footballers now is all... We all talk about it all the time. But you know, you look back at loads of stories now that you go, oh, I just didn't like it. And you go, oh, no, he's probably having a nervous breakdown in West London. This lad from... This lad from Brixham gone, why don't it smell of cockle?
You want East London for that?
No, yeah. So 2-2, extra time, penalties.
Yeah.
Everybody scores 12-11, and our goalkeeper scores the winner.
Oh.
She's Gareth Howell. Remember David Howells?
Yeah, the Tottenham player.
Tottenham player, his brother, Gareth Howell.
This is what we're talking about. What a claim to fame. David Howell's brother.
Yeah.
Do you remember obscure 90s football at war? His brother.
Yeah, how niche do you want this podcast to get?
I think if David Howells walked in, I'd struggle to recognise him. But Gareth Howells, the brother of David Howells. Yeah. Imagine being defined by your brother and it's David Howells.
Yeah. And so, you know, great story, innit? Keeper scores the winner. And guess who missed the Blackpool penalty for us to win? Dave Bamber.
Oh, wow.
We're now into a sudden death situation. And who will be nominated to take the next penalty for Torquay, I wonder? And believe it or not, it's Gareth Howells who's going to take the responsibility. And he scores. And not often you see a goalkeeper score at Wembley. And cool as you like, Gareth Howells scores. I wonder if Steve McElhaghy will want to return the compliment. Well, now it's going to be Dave Bamber. ...17 goals for Blackpool this season. I'm not sure whether this will count to his tally. But again, the pressure is on. And he's missed it! And Torquay United are back in Division 3. 19 years they've waited for this moment. The players go wild in the penalty area. And Torquay United earn promotion. And poor Dave Bamber doesn't know where to put himself. The Torquay United fans celebrate... The players celebrate. What a night it's been from them. And they're back in Division 3.
So was there like an open top bus?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, all that,
Through the middle of Torquay?
To be honest, Torquay's a very nice tourist destination. You can get an open top bus anyway.
So they just bought some tickets rather than organise their own thing.
They didn't have to organise it. They could have just all paid a quid and got on the top.
So did you go to that?
Mum will have taken us to that to watch that.
Wow.
But there's actually quite disappointing the open top bus, especially if there's not many people there holding the bus up.
They're doing 50 mile an hour.
Just a bus driving past.
It's a weird tradition, isn't it? The open top bus. Yeah. Well, you think about.
You have images of like Liverpool last year or the England cricket team.
Yeah. Exactly.
When there's 100,000 people out there. But yeah. I don't know if Plymouth did it when we won the playoffs in 96.
You know, I'm saying and I'm thinking and I can remember being there, but then I go, I wonder if that's just an imagined...
false memory.
I once got caught when I used to live in Highbury. I got caught. I just wanted to go to the shop to get some breakfast.
Oh, no.
And I got caught in the Arsenal open-top bus parade.
This is the mid-noughties. There's an open-top bus parade every other week back then in North London.
It was when they hadn't... Do you remember when they hadn't won anything in years, then they won the FA Cup?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So it was always... It's quite bittersweet anyway, because no one really cared about the FA Cup.
No. Did you ever see the footage of Ecstasy? I mean, those idiots... With Michael Jackson.
Yeah, we've covered that. Yeah, absolutely.
How did you feel as a Torquay fan when they've got Uri Geller, Michael Jackson, the King of Pop, coming down to their ground? Who was the biggest celebrity you would have had in Torquay?
Well, we're Helen Chamberlain.
Did you see Helen Chamberlain down?
I saw her at Macclesfield away once, so she's a proper fan.
And Peter, is she a hero?
Peter Cook supported Torquay United.
Did he?
Yeah.
Why did he support Torquay?
No idea, but
proper like in a real fan kind of way.
I don't know if he went, but in his but you look at it and he's written about them. And when we went to Wembley, he wrote about a thing about them. And yeah, wow. Torquay United and Spurs he supported, so you have to give him something.
But, and then you go up. I'm going to read a bit from the Wikipedia of the next season. Okay. Despite the high-profile signing of Justin Fashanu, the appointment of Ivan Golach as manager, and well-publicised visits of Julie Goodyear to the dressing room.
Yeah.
United were relegated after just one season. Yeah. So let's go through those three. Justin Fashanu, was he good?
Julie Goodyear was Justin. So Justin Fashanu had just come out.
Yeah. He was friends with Julie Goodyear.
Must have been through coming out, I think, and just being on that scene, was friends with Julie Goodyear. So she used to turn up.
I love the way Wikipedia's written about this, because there's, despite the high profile visits of Julie Goodyear to the dressing room, you still ended in relegation. Like, that would, you'd think that would be enough to stay up.
You didn't get the Julie Goodyear bounce. We're looking for the Julie Goodyear bounce. She guarantees you 15 points.
I don't understand what's going wrong. Julie Goodyear's been in the dressing room.
There it is, yeah.
Oh, wow. Julie Goodyear in the dressing room. Are they all in the bath there?
They're all in towels with champagne. So they must have just won something.
We just obviously have gone up and can't afford to be up, basically. And anyone... The trouble is, when you have half a decent player,
they just go.
Because they don't want to stay. They want to go to a better team or whatever.
Did Torquay have a good away following? Because Plymouth had an amazing away following because everyone leaves. Basically, everyone lives around the
diaspora.
There's Yorkshire gulls, and there's all sorts of gulls. The capital gulls, a big London thing. So we get at least sort of 300 or 400, and then maybe up to like 1,500 away still, even now.
And I feel like, I wonder, in those lower leagues, is there much trouble in when you go to those away games, or is it like the standard of football so low that no one's that invested?
Well, that was the funny thing, Plymouth. Of course, wherever they go.
Do they? Plymouth?
No. Well, Plymouth's got an insane away following. Like, it's huge.
Yeah.
So we take 2,000. We always sell out our way.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Plymouth's a sleeping giant.
That was the thing. In the National League South, we were like the big club, you know. And then we had one sort of group of youth who started turning up with smoke bombs and... flares
what
and stuff.
Colour? What colour? Yellow.
Yellow. Like ultras, you know. Doing the Poznan away at Dulwich Hamlet.
95-96 is a great season.
Yeah.
Well, not a great season, but an amazing, another avoidance of going out of the league. This time in...
So we've still never been out of the league at this point.
Yeah.
That's mad. Every year you're rolling the dice.
Every single year we are either promoted or going to be relegated. Yeah. And then we finish plumb last. In 95-96, by a mile, by an absolute mile. But to come up is Stevenage. They win the conference by about 15 points, as people do. But their ground's not good enough. So we're down. We're relegated. But then we get a phone call or whatever, be told you're not down. Stevenage's ground isn't good enough. They're not coming up, so you're still in the league. So we dodge it again.
My memory is that there was a knowledge that this was like Stevenage weren't going to be good enough, and you kind of started supporting them. Is that a false memory?
No. It sort of, I think we lost the league by a lot more points than we should have, because we basically went, well, can't go down anyway. So, so I think, it doesn't matter.
How
bad
must Stevenage's ground have been?
Yeah.
Because the grounds are awful.
No, but you have to have a certain amount of seating and that sort of, all the stuff that came in after Hillsborough was safety. So you had to have a certain amount of seating and that sort of stuff. But really terrible, isn't it, way to stay up, just the other team. Just you go,
You think as well they'd just go, the second place team could go up. Not...
Yeah, exactly.
No promotion. Oh,
that's it.
You stay up, even though you got 12 points.
But I wish we had gone down, because it's a brilliant thing to do, is go down. Like a lot of teams in the Premier League, I always think, be great for Everton or Man United to have another season in the Championship.
Well, I think Man City...
They'll win every week. They'd love it.
Yeah, I think Man City probably, when they went down twice and then came back up, that's probably... a brilliant time.
I mean, don't say that
to
Leeds or Nottingham Forest or any of those teams, but I think it's good for you to have
good for the soul.
Good for the soul to go and win. It's the same team. This is what you learn. It's the same blokes running around in front of you, you know, in a...
Yeah, you don't enjoy it any more or any less, whatever division
you're in. I don't think so.
I don't think. And then it all comes good again, somehow. You get Kevin Hodges as manager.
Yes, now Kevin Hodges and Gary Nelson come in as his assistant. There's some sort of link-up.
I just remembered how... amateur Torquay were. One of my PE teachers was also the youth coach at Torquay.
Who's that?
Mr. Steer. Mike Steer.
Mr. Steer, otherwise known as Mike Steer.
Otherwise known as
Thank
Mike
you,
Steer.
Just in case.
And I remember the excitement of when they brought out a later Championship Manager, Championship Manager 3, and you had staff. He was on Championship Manager.
Oh, how has this never come up?
That's amazing.
I'd completely forgotten that Mr. Steer was on Championship Manager.
Did it say Mr. Steer on Championship
Manager? It said Mike Steer in brackets, Mr.
Offer Mike Steer new contract?
No, not after today's lesson. But he did PE and technology. So he was, some days he was teaching woodwork and then going off to teach the talkie.
Very much an all-rounder, utility player.
Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah, and we had somehow in the mid-90s, a link-up with a team called FC Lambada.
Right.
That's not a real team.
Sent kits.
Yeah,
Or in the West Indies somewhere.
Yeah.
We got a player called Greg Goodridge who came over and was...
He was brilliant.
Properly...
From Lambada?
From FC Lambada. So we had this player and he was your classic... Maisie winger, but also brilliant up front. Like, brilliant, like far too good for us. Played for us a couple of seasons, absolutely brilliant. And then we sold him for decent money. But at the same time, we created this link up that we could look after. And then
With FC Lambada.
Rodney Jack turned up. And Rodney Jack is my favourite all time talker.
Really?
He was amazing, Rodney Jack.
Like, properly brilliant. We had decent left back. Paul Gibbs.
Great player. Was going out with Helen Chamberlain.
Was indeed.
Do you remember the local paper front page? Yeah, you're making the pose. Yeah, so I'm not wrong.
You're not
where wrong. He tattooed the talkie badge onto Helen Chamberlain's ass.
Yes, that was the front page news.
And why was he doing that?
Because he could.
Wasn't it a bet?
He probably had it done. I don't think Paul.
No, I don't think he did
actually
it. I don't think he'd done it himself.
Unless he'd got a sideline.
Yeah, but he posed with it.
Well, I had a look at the tattoo a bit earlier. I wouldn't say it's the most professional.
No.
So Gibbsy could have been responsible.
Never know. Well,
I think it was to celebrate them getting to Wembley.
Was that what it was?
It was some sort of bit.
If you get to Wembley, I'll have it tattooed on my ass.
Yeah, that's just fine.
He went to Brentford anyway.
He went to Plymouth.
Yeah, Plymouth.
He went directly to Plymouth.
Bastard.
He tattooed the crest and within 3 months he was playing for Plymouth.
Well, there's another cheek left. Who knows?
Yeah. Get a little pilgrim on the other side.
So you went to Wembley.
Well, with that season, we had a good team and we needed to go to Leyton Orient and get a draw to go up automatically. First time we would ever have done that in our history. And we lost. We lost, went down to 10 men, and Andy Gurney had to go in goal.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Our left back had to go in goal. So out-pitch player in goal.
Oh, the classic.
It's a gutted. And then we absolutely hammered Scarborough in the playoff semi-finals, like 7-2, or something like that. Amazing. Went to Wembley, Colchester, scored in the 22nd minute, penalty, and that was it. That was a Friday night to the England game. And we didn't even.
I love that they double booked the pitch.
Oh, I've got to get Torquay in. It's like probably driving around in that Sherpa van looking for a pitch.
Oh.
Yeah, just, you know, those gutting moments where you go, oh, it's not going to be what I thought. Because we'd had such a good season. And I'd had no work. I'd left drama school by then and I wasn't a comic. I had absolutely no money, no work, nothing. I was living in London, very poor. And I was in a miserable relationship, but hung everything on this this brilliant Torquay United team that kept winning, you know, week in, week out. I'd hung my life on this and then they lost. And that was the end of that. It was
sad.
Maybe I've learned at that moment, maybe don't hang your...
hang your hopes on Torquay United.
It's funny when things are going bad in your personal life that your team tend... I find they do bad as well.
Do you think?
That works for you, symbiotic that way.
One of my mates, the day West Ham got relegated in 2003, he got dumped by his girlfriend earlier in the day.
Yeah.
West Ham got relegated about five. He stayed in the pub, had a few pints of drink. Then at kind of 10 o'clock at night, walking home, a guy jumped out of the forest and hit him over the head with a plank.
God.
All on the same day.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Football can be a cruel mistress.
It can.
Really can.
I've got a couple more things from the 90s I want to ask you about. Yeah. Neville Southall played for Torquay for 53 games.
Was that? Is that, did he play for us for 53 games?
According to Wikipedia.
At the tail end of his
career.
That's
the most he played for a club apart from Everton. That's and he got your player of the year.
Well, he was amazing. Can you imagine him?
Was he unbelievable?
Even being rubbish.
Why was he playing for
even
Torquay?
Probably 5 stone overweight at that time.
Like
a wheelie bin.
Were you excited? You must have been so excited. Because it's a proper celebrity coming to play for your team.
You can't believe it. We had Chris Waddle.
Wow.
Chris Waddle played for us for 10 games. Didn't win one game. Jason Roberts played for us. And he scored. He was amazing. We didn't lose one game with him. And he scored like 11 and 11 or something crazy like that.
Wow.
He was brilliant. Yeah. So when someone like that, I think when someone like that turns up, they're either at the very end of their career and eking it out. But Neville Southall, if you're that good as he was, at one point the world's best goalkeeper, your positioning is so good. Actually, it's like having the extra 2 yards in your head as a striker. Your position is so good that you know what they're going to do because they're not as good as you in that, even in mentally. So he was so good because he'd just always be stood in the right place. But he'd also pull off unreal saves.
Would he? Was he a big unit by the way?
Yeah, big, yeah. There's photos of him in it. I think they had the sort of player you had to have a special shirt made. Because we bought Adebayo Akinfenwa back from Sweden or somewhere to play for us, and then he left for Swansea. Yeah. We sold him to Swansea, and then the rest is history. But yeah, he had to have special shorts, Adebayo Akinfenwa.
That was a 90s thing, wasn't it? I remember having Neil Ruddock, didn't it? Like having this custom kit made because you're so big.
Never. So when someone like that turns up, you think, well, this won't last forever, but hopefully their legs aren't gone, which with a goalkeeper they're not. But my mate at the time was a Bradford City fan, and that was when Bradford City were going into the Premier League, and Neville left us to go and play for Bradford City in the Premier League.
Wow. Yeah. I would have assumed it was after Bradford City.
He left us to play in the...
What?
I think he played in the Premier League or in the top of the Championship at least. He left us to go and do that.
Wow.
And that's why he left.
Using you like a springboard.
Exactly, looking for another move, I expect. No, but great when a player like that turns up. And then I don't think we got relegated in the 90s, but I think we got relegated in the 2000s. And so it was a real up and down.
But it was a good time, Torquay.
Yeah, but for me it was a real up and down. So my life was a very up and down in the 90s, so... I really do connect with two as, was it? I can't remember if it was good or not, because bits of it were good and then other bits of it were, I'd got too emotional about Torquay United connecting to my own life. So
I've got a question for you on that. So Plymouth, like supporting Plymouth, you have this hope that it could one day be a Premier League team.
Mm.
And supporting Torquay, there's not really that kind of idea. Is that easier to deal with? Would you prefer to support a team that was a sleeping giant? Or is there something reassuring about a team that is only ever going to go so high up?
If you were guaranteed to exist, then I would take it what I've got all day long.
Yeah.
But this is why I can never really listen to Premier League people who moan. Because you go, well, Bury don't exist. Macclesfield might not exist. Torquay could easily not exist. If the bloke who owns it at the moment goes, actually, I'm done.
Yeah.
Then we're £1 million in the hole. And,
you
know, no one's going to come in. It's really is for the 4,000 people who look out for their results every week. So if you took that doubt away, I'd still only support Torquay. The only thing that worries me is what if someone takes this away?
Yeah.
Because I love it so much. I've committed so much of my life to it. And supporting your local team, for me, is so important because it's home. You know, it's where I live now is home, but it's a link
to Devon.
Exactly, it's a link to Devon. It's not nostalgia. It's just, that's where I grew up and that's what's within me. And I think that's why people cling on to their football team so much.
Yeah.
It's because...
That sense of belonging.
It's you, isn't it? It's your core. It is your core. And so you go, I've always got that wherever I am. I'm always talking. That's why people wear their shirts on holiday, isn't it? Or people who don't have I love my job and I love my family. But people who don't have that, they've always got Man United or they've always got... Like, the people in Liverpool now will be like, well, I've waited, you know. They might have the worst job, but it'll get them through the week. Whereas if you, for me, it's like, oh no, there's a sense of home to your team. So
yeah.
I couldn't even think about supporting anyone else. That's the thing with Bury. I was like, well, I don't know what you do. What do you do?
Yeah, you don't suddenly support Oldham.
I'm not going to support anyone else. And although, so my son now, he was supporting Arsenal for a bit, and we went to a few games, and it's a trek in, you know, it's a real trek to go. I don't live in London. It's a, you know, but I support, that's who he wants to support. He's chosen that himself. I'll get us tickets. We'll go. We went to a few games. Took him to an Oxford United game beginning of this year. It was Coventry on a Saturday. It was 3-3. Same player scored 2 own goals. Oxford equalised in the 89th. He lost his mind. And because it's where he's from, he was like, Dad, I get it. And he's like, Oxford. And he's now like, we go. And, you know, he's now like me going, can we go? Can we go tonight? You know?
Oh, that's nice.
But that's actually quite a nice way to watch football, because you care if they win, but if they lose, you don't care.
Yeah.
But nothing beats Ben Winter in the National League South whacking it in for 3-3 to mean we win the National League South. You know, nothing beats that.
That's the best answer we've ever had at the end. Like, there is a normal question to do at the end, but we'll just tack it on. Would you go back to January the 1st, 1990, and do it all again?
I don't think I would, because I didn't enjoy it. I don't look back at it as a happy time.
I love
Torquay, and I love, absolutely love Torquay, and I love supporting a team that had dogs run on the pitch and saved us, or we've had to beat Barnet on the last day of the season, or we went up at Southend once on the last. Everything's always last day of the season. I love all that, but it's really stressful. So I wouldn't want to relive it all again, because I know I've got stress to come. So it's like, you just have to enjoy it.
Just have to get through it.
You just have to enjoy. Let's get as often. We'll turn up on a Saturday, 3:00. Right, let's get through this.
And Michael, as a thank you, what have you got, Charlie?
Oh, my goodness.
So as a thank you, we have got you a, I couldn't tell you what season it's from, but
I'm gonna say
a Torquay United.
Thank you so much.
Shirt. I mean, the sponsor is, you might be able to age it by the sponsor.
No, I've got that shirt, but that's come off.
Oh, wow. There we go.
So I think it's probably been thrown away. That's the away shirt. I'm going to say from about 97, 98. That's so nice.
The maker, Super
League. Thank you so much, Super League. I don't think I even did Slim Fit at that point. So it even fit. That's so kind. Thank you very, very much.
No. Charlie Baker, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Charlie Baker talking about Torquay United. We've actually, we moved that higher up the series, nearer the start of the series, should I say, because we genuinely felt in the current climate that was such a positive and nice interview, particularly the end of it, that was actually just what we needed to put out. So I hope you all enjoyed it. It's the second time in 3 episodes where we've ended with a kind of rousing speech about what a football club means to their fans or to their biggest player, which I hope becomes a motif of all of our interviews from now on.
Do you know what, as well, as a like kind of as a Premier League football fan, doing that interview makes me realise that I've got no real kind of idea of what it's like to be a non-league fan. I take so much of the kind of Premier League experience for granted.
Yeah.
I forget that, you know, there's a probably the majority of football fans in this country support lower league teams, and to hear like what that kind of gritty experience is like is fascinating.
I think it is a different experience. It's weird, isn't it? Because if you're in the lower leagues and you don't want to be in the Premier League, then what are you playing for? It kind of feels like, to me, like I always, at least with Plymouth, there's that hope. Do you know what I mean? There's that feeling that it is a club that could be Bournemouth. But if you're Torquay United, it is that forever. So what you're falling in love with is the identity of Torquay United and the journey that you're on, I think. Did you enjoy
West
Ham?
It's romantic.
It is. It definitely is. It has to be. Otherwise, what the hell is it? And did you enjoy West Ham being in the lower league? Well, in
absolutely not.
No.
I hate it far more. So, like, I like, do you know where West Ham are pitched in the Premier League? I enjoy as a fan, because if you lose, you're not totally kind of distraught every weekend, which is helpful for West Ham winning the Premier League. But when West Ham are in the Championship, we are generally, if we're down there, one of the biggest clubs in the league, and you expect to win every week. And I cannot deal with that kind of pressure. And that's, I imagine, I know that Ricky Hatton says that he actually preferred it when Man City weren't kind of top of the table.
It's a real classic thing to say, isn't it?
I would
it?
Get that.
Michael, as a Man U fan, do you in any way kind of... I think we had this discussion on the day after the interview. It kind of, it's the one interview that kind of affected us the most.
I felt an immense sense of, which is weird, but like guilt for supporting Manchester United.
Finally! Like,
yeah, partly because obviously, you know, I was born on the Isle of Wight. It's physically impossible to be born in a hospital further away from Old Trafford and still be in the UK or still be in England as I was. So I am the definition of a glory hunter, although I still maintain we were not good in 1987, so I'm not a glory hunter. But it made me really sort of miss something that I'd never had, kind of lamenting that identity or that connection with a club. Like Chris said, I've definitely taken for granted, not winning, I don't think, but just there's a detachment there. It really made me want to follow lower league football or like find a team near me and just sort of support them and go on that journey.
Why don't you be a proper fan and start supporting FC United?
Because I also think you have. I think you have a stronger attachment to the players, like Charlie was talking about Tony Beddoe, because they're closer to you. You can see them there. They're living more your life. You know, the access to them is probably better if you're involved in the club. Like the players in the Premier League, they feel like they're from a different world. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
To what we live in.
I feel that same way. I used to feel that same way about music as well. Like I could never understand someone being fanatic about a Madonna or a Michael Jackson because they live in a different world. For me, it was sort of the guy that was on bass in the band that just got signed and probably had like a 6 month tour cycle in them and then they were done. I was like, that's the non-league football equivalent.
Yeah. Do you think there's a way in which you being the producer of Quickly Kevin, you are the guy on bass for the small band when it comes to the podcast?
Yeah, that's why I'm stringing this out for as long as I can, mate. You guys have got solo careers. I've got nothing. I'm bonehead, basically.
Before anyone writes in that he was the guitarist, it was Gwigsy on bass. But, right.
I'm trying to think now of like bassists who've gone on to big things. Fatboy Slim?
Paul McCartney?
Yeah, Paul McCartney.
Paul McCartney did all right for himself. Okay, now the quiz.
Yeah, same as always. Chris and Josh in a game of starting 11. You know the rules by now. We normally pick a game that matches the guest of the episode. I don't think anybody is getting a talkie game. That's going to die very quickly. So what I thought was, seeing as we're in some kind of football-based lockdown / postponement, I'd pick the most infamous postponed game from the 90s, and that was Middlesbrough versus Blackburn from 1996, when Middlesbrough were docked 3 points for not turning up.
I'd argue there's a more famous postponed game. West Ham played Crystal Palace and the floodlights went out halfway through.
No one remembers that.
No?
No one remembers
Literally
that.
Literally nobody remembers that. Right. Nice try. So it is the, what I believe would be the rescheduled game of Blackburn versus Middlesbrough that season, which took place on the 8th of May, 1997.
So wait, this is the rescheduled vote. So did they actually end up playing that game, but they got docked 3 points? I just presume the game had never happened.
Well, that's exactly what I presumed, and what I was going to do was I was going to find the starting 11 lineups for both teams for the match prior to that and face it off against each other. But actually,
they did play them
later in that season, so I can only presume that they...
And then what was the result?
Well, the result was 0-0, so...
Well worth the wait.
The world in which Middlesbrough, still could have stayed up. But anyway, Blackburn Middlesbrough, May 1997. Okay. Chris, would you like to go first?
I will go first, and I will say Juninho.
Correct.
Janina. Fabrizio Ravanelli? Oh, God. How come? The White Feather? The White Feather must have been
incorrect.
Playing. Oh, come on.
Who's in goal at this time? I think it's Mark Schwarzer.
No.
Wrong. Is it too early?
It's that guy who had a headband. Ben something. Ben Roberts? But that's not my guess.
Well, I feel like you said a name. You can't then retract.
Oh, God, if I go down with Ben Roberts. Was it Ben Roberts?
Correct.
Oh! Because he was in goal. This was the year they went down, but also lost the FA Cup final after. He's in goal when they concede after 42 seconds or whatever it is.
There's a few you could choose from here, isn't there?
Who was the other team? Blackburn? That's tougher, isn't it?
I'm going to go with Emerson.
Correct.
Blackburn just feels like it's not going to be that league-winning team of 95. So Shearer's left. Is Sutton still there, or has he gone to Chelsea by this point? Who stayed at Blackburn? Did Colin Hendry stay at Blackburn? Colin Hendry.
Correct.
Oh.
I'll go with Craig Hignett.
Correct.
So this Blackburn team, they must have had some players that stayed. Oh, Tim Flowers?
Correct.
Was Roy Hodgson the manager by now, or am I too early there?
I think you're too early.
So who was the manager? Did they just not have a manager for a few years?
Probably. Is it Tony Parsons?
It's not Hodgson,
Tony
is it?
Parsons?
No, not Tony Parsons.
From just a minute.
That's Nicholas Parsons. Tony Parsons wrote Man and Boy, and he used to be married to Julie Burchill.
Yeah, do you not remember his caretaker stint in charge of Blackburn?
Tony Parks.
Tony Parks, that's it.
Yeah, he looked like Tony Robinson. Just to make it even more confusing.
I've got another one for. Is this my go?
Yeah.
Yeah, your go, Chris.
Gianluca Festa.
Correct.
I should say that I used to play as Middlesbrough on Championship Manager around this time.
Go. Here we bloody go. I'm going to go with Stuart Ripley.
He was a substitute.
Oh, believe it or not.
And he came on in the 73rd minute.
Oh,
so, pick again.
Robbie Musto? Is that someone?
He played, correct.
Oh.
Graham Lassow. I don't think he's at Chelsea until that summer.
Yeah, that's good, that.
Correct.
Good one. Really good one. Oh, come on. Middlesbrough this time. So, Ravanelli's not playing. Mikel Beck?
Correct.
Oh, that's a really good shot.
Shit, wasn't it? He was terrible.
This is such a gamble. I don't want to gamble. I really want to win this. I'm invested now. It's gone on too long. I've got two, and they're both gambles.
Okay.
I think around this time, Kevin Gallagher would have been playing up top for Blackburn.
Kevin Gallagher?
It's a gamble. It is a gamble. But it's correct.
Oh, great one. Blimey. Do you know what I'm going to go with? Colin Cooper.
I don't think that's right. I think it's too early.
I don't think it's right either, but I'm...
I think he's at Nottingham Forest then.
Yeah.
Colin Cooper is incorrect.
So I've got my other guess would have been Nigel Pearson.
He was at Middlesbrough, correct?
And was he playing that game?
He was playing that game.
Wow!
So it was Colin Hendry, Graham Lassow, your mate Ian Pearce, Jeff Kenner, Paul Warhurst, Henning Berg in midfield, Billy McKinley, Tim Sherwood, Gary Flitcroft, and then up front, as said, Kevin Gallagher. And for Middlesbrough, Ben Roberts.
Say is it's astonishing how quickly a team that wins the league can be total dog shit. That's 2 years after they won the league. You wouldn't think it'd be that easy to, like, a league winning team to deteriorate into playing Billy McKinley, Jeff Kenner, Kevin Gallagher.
It's a real batting collapse, isn't it? Like a footballing batting collapse. Yeah. I tell you, and I really think that shows what a mistake it was to make Nicholas Parsons the manager.
And for the purists, because people do message in, the Middlesbrough team, Ben Roberts, Gianluca Festa, Nigel Pearson, ooh, Curtis Fleming, Emerson, Clayton Blackmore, hopefully one day a guest on this show, Phil Stamp, Janino, Robbie Musto, Craig Hignett, and Mikel Beck.
Yeah.
So, Chris, would you like to pick the song that plays out at the end of the show?
The song I want to play out, I can't believe this hasn't come up before. I watched Evita for the first time of the day, and I couldn't believe Jimmy Nail was in it.
He's got
a major role in Evita.
Wow.
And that reminded me of the pop career of Jimmy Nail. So please, can I have Ain't No Doubt by Jimmy Nail?
Yes, please.
That's it for this week. Up next, an amazing interview that I absolutely loved.
One of my favourite
ever. Our first goalkeeper, I think I'm right in saying, Mr. Dave Besant. That'll be up next week. Until then, Robbie Slater, see you later.
She says, it's not you, it's me. I need a little time, a little space, a place to find myself again, you know. Oh, yeah, I know a goodbye when I hear it. She smiles, but her heart's already out there, walking down the street. She says,
I don't want nobody else, I love you.
She's lying.
There won't be somebody else, and that's true.
is live.